At this time, I'd like to call to order the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting of April 14th, 2014. The time is now 6 p.m. 2.0, public comments and receipt of petitions. At this time, anybody will be allowed to speak on any matter other than personnel matters or matters under litigation for a length of time not to exceed 3 minutes. No commission discussion or action may take place on a matter until such matter has been placed on the agenda and posted in accordance with law. Is there anyone who'd like to speak? Got it. 3 points. Staff, are there any reports and announcements to the board?
Next month, we will have a CPAC meeting. The time has not been set, but we wanted to let you know we'll have a CPAC meeting for the next 2 months.
For both months?
Yes, for both months.
For 4.0, consideration to approve the minutes of the regular Planning and Zoning Commission meeting of March 10th, 2014. Is there a motion to approve the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Is there any discussion? Any corrections? Okay. All right. Please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. 5.0, new business. 5.1, consideration to approve Matthews Edition preliminary plat being a subdivision of 661.77377 acres of land situated in the Joseph House Survey, abstract number 34 in Harris County, Texas, and abstract number 20 in Montgomery County, Texas. Staff, could we please have a report?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the city of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are being presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration. 1. Add signature block to lien holder. 2. Bold new lot lines. 3. Provide tax certificates for Harris County, City of Tomball, and Tomball ISD. 4. Show sets and founds. And 5. The plat fees were underpaid by $351.50. Payment is required with submittal of final plat. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these considerations.
Thank you. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve with contingencies.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion? Okay, please enter your votes now.
Motion carries 4-0.
5.2, consideration to approve 1603 Hicks subdivision, being a subdivision of 2.6409 acres of land situated in the Joseph House Survey, abstract number 34 of Harris County, Texas, and being a replat of lot 3 of amending plat of 249 at Huff Smith subdivision, a subdivision according to the map or plat thereof recorded in clerk's file number 509116 of the map records of Harris County, Texas, and being the same land as described in deed recorded under clerk's file number Y068948 of the real property records of Harris County, Texas. Staff, can we have a report, please?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the city of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Provide tax certificates for Harris County, City of Tomball, and Tomball ISD. Show sets and founds, and verify the lien holder listed on the title report is the same as the lien holder on the plat. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat upon contingent upon these considerations.
Okay, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve the contingency.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, is there any discussion? Seeing none, please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
All right. 5.3, consideration to approve Braniff Place being a replat of lots 32 and 33 of a revised map of Tomball, City of Tomball, recorded under Volume 4 Page 25 of the map records of Harris County, Texas, located in the William Hurd Survey, abstract number 371, Harris County, Texas. Staff, could we have a report, please?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Add a signature block for the P&Z chair and vice chair and mayor and city secretary. Add dedication statements and certificates language. Remove building lines from rear and side. Change the building line in front to 20 feet. Add adjacent owner's information. Provide copies of utility notification letters and remove the plat language on the plat and address minor comments, decimal points for acreage and square footage. Engineering recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these comments being addressed.
Okay, thank you. Is there a motion to approve with contingencies?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, is there any discussion? Seeing none, please enter your vote.
Motion carries 4-0.
5.4, consideration to approve Dewey Casa preliminary plat being a subdivision of 0.731 acres located in the Joseph House Survey A34. Harris County, Texas, containing 0.731 acres. Staff, could we have a report?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are being presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Provide utility notification letters. Provide tax certificates for Harris County, City of Tomball, and Tomball ISD. Change front building line to 35 feet. Correct the legal description. Correct the dedication statements and certificates language. Address minor comments. Add decimals to acres and names. Plat fees were underpaid by $345.50. All fees required with final plat submittal. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these comments being addressed.
Is there a motion to approve with contingencies?
Motion to approve with contingencies.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion? Seeing none, please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. 5.5, consideration to approve Peck Station final plat, a subdivision of 34.4945 acres of land situated in the Jesse Pruitt Survey, abstract number 629, City of Tomball, Harris County, Texas, being a replat of lots 296, 297, 298, 302, 303, 308, 309, 310, and 311 of Tomball Townsite, Volume 2, page 65, MRHC. Staff, could we have a report, please?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Remove center point property from the plat due to being dedicated by separate instrument. Address minor comments names. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these comments being addressed.
Is there a motion to approve with contingencies?
I'll approve it with contingencies.
You're making a motion?
Yes, I make a motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Seeing none, please enter your vote.
Motion carries 4-0.
5.6, motion or consideration to approve reserve at Tomball, partial replat number 1. A 47.65-acre tract of land being a partial replat of reserve at Tomball is recorded under film code number 640133 HCMR, being out of called 85.64 84-acre tract recorded under Harris County Clerk's file number 201-00211-861 and a called 4-acre tract recorded under HCCF number Z177722 in the Jesse Pruitt Survey, abstract number 629, City of Tomball, Harris County, Texas. Staff, could we have a report, please?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are being presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Provide tax certificates for Harris County, City of Tomball, and Tomball ISD. Provide copies of utility notification letters. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these comments being addressed.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve with contingencies? Can't even talk today. Thank you, Richard. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
5.7, consideration to approve standalone fire station preliminary plat, a 27.7034-acre tract of land being out of call 28.25-acres tract recorded under Harris County Clerk's file number Y532630 in the Joseph Miller Survey, abstract number 50, City of Tomball, Harris County, Texas. Staff, do we have a report?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat.
Okay. Is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any discussion? Please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
5.8, consideration to approve standalone fire station final plat. A 27.7034-acre tract of land being out of a called 28.25-acre tract recorded under Harris County Clerk's file number Y532630 in the Joseph Miller Survey, abstract number 50, City of Tomball, Harris County, Texas. Staff, could we have a report, please?
This subdivision plat has been reviewed by engineering and planning for compliance with the existing ordinances of the City of Tomball, Texas. Based on this review, the following comments are presented to the Planning and Zoning Commission for consideration in the platting process. Provide tax certificates for Harris County, City of Tomball, and Tomball ISD. Provide copies of utility notification letters. Provide title report. Add right-of-way and City of Tomball utility easement dedication along Huff Smith Road. Engineering and planning recommends approval of this plat contingent upon these comments being addressed.
Is there a motion to approve with contingencies?
Approve. I motion to approve with contingencies.
Thank you, Michelle. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right. Is there any discussion? Please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. 5.9, consideration to approve zoning case P14-028. Request by Stutz Cox Builders, Incorporated on behalf of Amy and Ronald Hafner for a conditional use permit to operate an accountant's office with one residential sleeping quarter. The property is approximately 0.68 acres, is legally described as Lot 2, Block 2, Brown Husmith Commercial, is generally located south of Brown Husmith Road between State Highway 249 and Quinn Road and is located in the office district. The public hearing on zoning case P14-028 is now called to order. Let the record show the time is now 6:14. So, staff, could we have a presentation, please?
Yes, ma'am. Good evening, Madam Chairperson and Commissioners. Rebecca Guerra, City Planner. The next item before you today is item 5.9 in the name of Stutz Cox Builders Incorporated on behalf of Ronald and Amy Hafner and is a request for a conditional use permit to allow for an accountant's office with one residential unit. The subject site is approximately 0.68 acres and is generally located south of Brown Road between State Highway 249 and Quinn Road. The comprehensive plan designates the future land use of this site as employment office. Immediately surrounding the site are lands with a future land use designation of employment office, mixed use, and medium density residential. As you can see from the zoning map, the property is within the office district. Surrounding the site are lands in the Plan Development 1 district, which is approved for office uses only, single-family 20 estate district, and the general retail district. Here's a picture of the property. As you can see from the photo, the site is currently vacant. Its current triangular configuration came about as a result of the property being cut in two by the extension of Brown Road. These two halves abut the new Brown Road on either side. The smaller of the two halves at 0.68 acres is the subject of this request. So here's the concept plan proposed for the site. As you can see, a 3,500 square foot, one-story office building with one residential unit is being planned. In this configuration, the site will be able to provide a minimum of 12 parking spaces required per the zoning ordinance, as well as meet the minimum 35-foot front setback. And in addition, there'll be an 8-foot tall opaque wooden fence constructed along the southern and the western property lines. Here are some elevations of how the structure is proposed to be constructed. It'll be a one-story, 23-foot high structure that'll be built to look like a residence, utilizing stucco and brick facades. Property owners within 200 feet of the project site were mailed notification of this proposal on April the 3rd, and as of 5 p.m. today, no public comment forms have been received. City staff recommends approval for the following reasons before you and in your staff reports. The proposed accountant's office with one residential unit appears to be consistent with the comprehensive plan. The development is not anticipated to create excessive amounts of traffic, noise, trash, or late-night business operations, and vehicular traffic will not normally travel through the adjacent residential areas. The design of the proposed office is intended to be compatible with requirements of the PD1 district, which is immediately adjacent to the site. And finally, the proposed uses do not appear to be materially detrimental to the public health, safety, convenience, or welfare, or result in material damage or prejudice to the other property in the vicinity. It's hard to say. The action requested is to approve conditional use permit P14-028, subject to two conditions of approval. Those conditions are, one, the site shall be developed and operated in substantial compliance with Exhibit F. That's that concept plan that you saw. If the site is not developed or operated in substantial compliance with Exhibit F, the conditional use permit shall be revoked. And the second condition of approval would be the site shall be prohibited from having outdoor sales, storage, or displays. If the site is found to be utilizing outdoor storage, sales, or displays, the conditional use permit shall be revoked. So this is to intend that it operates as an office with the one residential unit. This concludes staff's presentation. We're available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the applicant please come forward to present the case and state your name and address for the record, please?
I'm Alan Cox of Stutz Cox Builders, 10 Champions Court Trail, Houston, Texas, 77069.
Floor is yours.
Do you have anything you'd like to add, or do you agree with staff's recommendation? Thank you, sir.
Do you have anything else that you'd like to add to it?
Okay. He's good.
All right, you're good. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Is there anyone here that'd like to speak regarding this request? You will have 3 minutes to speak, and just please state your name and address for the record. No one? Okay. There are no additional comments. Public hearing is now closed. The time is now 6:18. May I have a motion to approve zoning case P14-028?
Motion to approve.
Subject to two conditions. Yes. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Does anybody have any questions?
Yes, I do have a question. What size is the residential going to be? Since we're talking about office space, how big is the office? And if you can give me a better description of what space they're going to use.
So out of the 3,500, I think Mr.
$3,500 total,
2,500 office space. So I guess if you subtract 2,500 from 35, you get...
It's about 1,000.
Yeah.
So what are we looking at? One bedroom, one
Mr.
bath?
Mr. Cox, kitchen. Could you come up to the podium, please?
Yeah,
the Hafners live out near the hill country and operate this business kind of remotely. And they come down during tax season for 6 or 8 weeks, and that's when they want to stay there. They'll stay there during the evening to have to avoid having to get an apartment. That's the only time it'll be used. It's probably
so we're not looking at having children or anything. It's just adults.
It's probably just one or two adults at the most. Yeah, no kids, no playground.
No dogs, no animals.
No dogs, no cats.
But for the record, they could have them.
Right.
Yes, it is a residence.
Mm-hmm.
So they could. They just couldn't have like a veterinary service or a stable, that kind of thing.
Do you have any questions?
I think that's good.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Mr. Cox. Okay, is there any other discussion? Okay, please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
Thank you. 5.10. Consideration to approve zoning case P14-040, request by 2978 Panoramas LP to amend the city's zoning ordinance by rezoning approximately 34.4945 acres of land situated in the Jesse Pruitt Survey, abstract number 629, City of Tomball, Harris County, Texas. Said 34.4945 acres being comprised of Harris County Appraisal District tracts 12 and 11M-4, all of lots 296, 297, 302, and portions of lots 298, 303, 308, 309, 310, and 311 of Tomball Township. A subdivision is shown on map or plat recorded under Volume 2. Page 65 of the Harris County map records, generally located northerly of FM 2920 between Snook Lane and FM 2978, from the commercial and single family residential 9 districts to the planned development 6 district to facilitate a mixed use development. The public hearing on zoning case P14-040 is now called to order. Let the record show the time is now 6:22. Staff, could we have a presentation, please?
Yes, ma'am. The next case before you tonight is item 5.10. It's a request by 2978 Panoramas LP for a rezoning of the subject property from the commercial and single family residential 9 districts to the plan development number 6 district. The subject property is approximately 34.5 acres in size and is located northerly of FM 2920 between Snook Lane and FM 2978. The comprehensive plan identifies the site as mixed use. Surrounding the site are lands with a future land use designation of mixed use, high density residential, and medium density residential. The proposed rezoning appears to be consistent with the comprehensive plan. Surrounding the site are lands zoned single family 6, commercial, and plan development number 2 districts. The purpose of a plan development district is to accommodate an appropriate combination of uses, which may be planned, developed, or operated as integral land use units, either by a single owner or a combination of owners. Since the design standards proposed for this development seem to be appropriate in the immediate area concerned, the proposed rezoning to plan development appears to be consistent with the zoning map. Here are two pictures of the subject site. As you can tell, it's vacant. And here's the proposed concept plan for the development of the property. So the southern tract of the PD, which is about 18.25 acres, is proposed to have up to 310 multifamily dwelling units, as well as the stormwater facilities for the development. The maximum height for the multifamily buildings will be 3 stories or 45 feet, whichever is less. So this is consistent with the zoning ordinance for the multifamily district. Outdoor sales, storage, and display will be absolutely prohibited in the southern tract. Now, on the northern tract, which is 13.47 acres, that's proposed to have a specified list of non-residential uses, and that list is located on the concept plan. We also have a copy of it for our records as well. And those uses include retail, professional office, hotel, and personal services, among other commercial uses. And in fact, they use the commercial district to come up with the standards for the design of how the northern tract will be developed. Outdoor storage will be prohibited in the northern tract, and outdoor display and sales will be limited to an area no more than 30 feet from the business's front door, but not within a parking stall or a fire lane or a drive aisle. So here are some elevations which depict how the multifamily and non-residential will be constructed. And as you can see, the predominant building materials will be stucco, stone, wood, and glass. Property owners within 200 feet of the project site were mailed notification of this proposal on April the 3rd, and as of 5 p.m. today, no comment forms have been received. Staff recommends approval of zoning case P14-040 for the following reasons shown before you and in your staff reports. The proposed rezoning to a mixed-use PD district appears to be consistent with the comprehensive plan's designation of this site as mixed use. The proposed rezoning is not anticipated to negatively impact public streets, water supply, sanitary sewers, or other utilities to the area. There are no other tracts, vacant or occupied, in the vicinity, man, that word's getting me today, or elsewhere in the city, zoned PD intended for the same purpose as proposed by the property owner. There has been no development citywide or within the vicinity in a PD intended for the same purpose as the proposed applicant. And finally, if the proposed zoning change were approved, there should be few, if any, effects on other areas designated for similar developments. The action requested is to recommend approval of zoning case P14-040. This concludes staff's presentation. We're available for any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you. Will the applicant please come forward to present your case and state your name and address for the record, please?
I'm Jerry Haley with Panormas, 2978 Panormas. And my address is 19221 I-45 South, Suite 370, Conroe, Texas, 77385.
My name is Damon Palermo, and I'm also a partner in entity that owns the real estate. My address is 10200 Grogan's Mill Road, Suite 550, The Woodlands, Texas, 77380.
We have a brief PowerPoint that kind of goes with what Rebecca just gave you. And we kind of want to introduce ourselves a little bit at the beginning. We've been working on this for a long time. We started looking at this about a year ago, a little over a year ago. We have spent many hours with Lori and Rebecca amongst others here in town, and have worked hard to get to this point tonight. I think we've done a pretty decent job of doing our research. Do you mind me, this one?
Yes, the one that goes, the two arrows? There you go.
All right. 2978 Panormas is a joint venture between White Oak Developers, which is our company, and Damon's company, Palermo REI. Damon and I have known each other for about 25 years, so we're not new at this. We've both been in the real estate business, doing similar but different things over that period of time. And we've stayed in contact since graduate school, so we're always around each other. And we've been looking for something to do, and this was a good project. We were both looking in this area, and it worked out very nicely. Between my company and Damon's company, we have over 100 years of combined experience in land development, construction, management. We do a lot of things between the two of us. And finally, we just want to let y'all know we're a well-capitalized organization. We've paid cash for the property. We intend to have no financing to do the infrastructure, to extend the road, build Winfrey Road, extend it through from 2978. To Snook Lane. We will extend water and sewer from south of, well, 2978, just north of 2920, up 2978, and down Winfrey Lane to Snook Road. All that will be done for the city, our benefit, but also the city's benefit, because it will tie in some utility lines that are undersized there on Snook to get better size and quality. And we're doing all that at our cost without any financing. So we're real. And this is very similar photos to what you've seen before. One thing we do want to discuss while this aerial is up is y'all being around here know that 2978, 2920 has long been a flooding issue during peak rain times, and even that track to the south has held water there for a long time. Part of our plan is a comprehensive drainage plan for this site. We have worked closely with our hydrologist and TxDOT. We will collect the water in the
owner on it?
It'll come up on that one. There you go.
Right here in this southwest corner of the property, we'll have a 4.5-acre detention pond that has been designed, and it will flow, will gravity flow it back. The gravity flow back east along Winfrey Lane and tie into the TxDOT storm sewer system they have that takes the water to Spring Creek. So we'll alleviate 34 plus acres of drainage that's traditionally headed southeast to that intersection. That water will no longer go southeast to that intersection. It's going to be intercepted and taken north to Spring Creek. We have that approval from TxDOT, and Lori has our hydrology study, as well as that approval from TxDOT that she's reviewing now. So we have that approved, and that's another benefit for the city that we'll be providing. Along with, as you know, again, being longtime folks, Winfrey Lane, it was dedicated to the city, I think, about 1909 or something like that. It is about 6 or 8 feet wide. It's a mud and gravel just lane. It's nothing out there, but it's on the city's it's on the city's right of ways. In 2012, when the tract around it that surrounds us was platted, the right of way was granted. The additional right of way granted to build a city street was done at that time. When we purchased our land, we were able to pick up that 1 acre there on Snook. That way it allows us to build that through street, make Winfrey a through street that will run from 2978 to Snook Lane and tie in that whole corridor there, give some extra relief of traffic in that area. These are just, again, some development highlights that some of which were, Rebecca went over a while ago. We just wanted to hit a couple of things. We, you know, the uses are hotel, motel, multifamily, retail, shopping center. We see some secondary restaurants and some local food establishments going in there, office, convenience store, things that support the developments in that area. And that, those will go on the north side of the track. We will stay consistent with Class A construction. This is going to be primarily stucco, stone, brick. That's what these development the construction will be within each of the developments. We will stay consistent. They'll all have a similar architectural style. There won't be a hodgepodge of different color patterns or you know, one won't be red brick and the next one white stone. We're going to have a consistent flow throughout the entire development. Green space and open space requirements on each track will meet or exceed what the city's requirements are right now. And Winfrey Lane, when we put it in accordance with the city standard now, it will be a tree-lined road from, well, we can't do it off our property, but from where our property starts through the Snook, it will be a tree-lined road during that part, and then the property owners, I guess, will be responsible for that from our property back east to 2978. Doing sidewalks throughout, crosswalks, it'll be a walkable community. We want it to be where the multifamily can walk across to the retail that we have on the north side. We want it to where the hotel occupants can walk, because we know we're starting this, it's going to be we're part two. Baker Hughes is out there, it's there, it's not going anywhere. They're having 50,000 hotel visits a year they're bringing to this city. Those people will be staying across the street in our development. When we get going, that's going to be the catalyst to get that 52 acres that surrounds us going. And there'll be restaurants and retail and those things, and we want these people to be able to walk and come in at night from their job at Baker Hughes, walk over there and enjoy the amenities that will be part of that 52 acres as well. So that's a big part of this development too, and we work closely with Rebecca as we work these things out. The next point is the drainage that we discussed a while ago, and then the last points there are the same things we've been discussing as far as extension of Winfrey Road, extension of the water and gas that we'll be putting there. And we're making some minor improvements. Snook has some sewer issues, and as part of our development, we're going to fix a few things in Snook that we've discussed with Lori and Bobby. And so we'll be doing that as part of this project as well. You want to talk about this? This is your expertise.
We also explored during the review of the overall development what type of impact we might have on the community, not only from an infrastructure standpoint and from a commercial development perspective, but also economic development. We analyzed what the current environment is and what's been adopted by the city in terms of its generated taxes that could be as a result of this development, and we dissected the various layers there and tried to identify, we think, from a conservative standpoint, the overall development costs for the project at completion, with all of vertical improvements, in addition to our horizontal improvements, you could say, would be approximately, from a conservative standpoint, about $50 million all in. From that point of view, what we did is we took certain industry standards on and estimates as it relates to labor and materials and those types of costs that could help generate sales tax and hotel and occupancy tax and ad valorem tax implications here, and we think that the figures that are shown on the screen there are realizable if the development is allowed to move forward, of course, and we're able to bring forth the amount of the vertical development as planned. But I think they're not insignificant when looking at the different elements that make up the city's municipal incentives and revenue from a revenue perspective, what we can generate.
And the next few are just hitting a few highlights, which is kind of what we're looking for. The hotel, we're talking to about four groups right now that have interest. We can't sell anything because we don't have zoning and we have a mud trail to get to it, so it's kind of difficult. But we do have people interested. We are talking to them. And the first thing out of our mouths is everyone is going to be a flagged or branded hotel. We're not looking, you know, it's going to be a significant, this will be a name that you know, recognize, and it'll be a something you're proud of to have in your city. And these are the kind of names that we're looking for, the Homewood Suites, Hilton Garden Inn, Courtyard on Marriott, those kind of things. That's what we're looking for. Catering to business, travelers, and families, primarily to Baker Hughes, but you know, the weekend, Damon does a lot of weekend soccer events here in Tomball. They play a lot of tournaments over this way. That's the traveler we're looking for. We think it will be between 80 and 120 units, minimum of 80 for sure, nothing smaller than that. And we think the average daily rate will be somewhere in the $110 rate. You know the type of facility we're looking at here. So that's what we're doing for the hotel development.
And those statistics that help kind of define this portion of the development weren't made in a vacuum. We conducted a number of telephone and or in-person interviews and outreach, I guess you would say. We also met with representatives of Baker Hughes to understand really what their needs assessment might be, and that helped form the foundation for a lot of what we have here, but both in regard to the hotel and throughout ancillary retail and commercial that would be in support of it, and as well as the multifamily. So these, my background, I worked for 10 years for the Woodlands Development Corporation, so master plan communities was something I grew up in. You learn early on that your client is the primary interface. You can dream up all types of plans and what may go best here, what may go best there, but your clients are the ones that help dictate the need, and then it's our responsibility to try and wrap that concept and deliver at the final analysis something that meets or exceeds their expectation.
The next slide is on our multifamily development that we propose on the south side of Winfrey Lane. We are looking, it will be a Class A apartment project. It will not involve any type of subsidized or tax credit units. It is market, premium market rent, not just, it'll require a premium rent. We are talking with a couple of the people up there in particular, and we had discussions with them. In fact, some of the renderings that you saw as part of your package on the apartments, one of them is the Allure, which is in Cedar Park, Texas. That was done by NRP, and we've had discussions with them. They say if they come here, that's the project they want to do. They're going to, they called it Texas Modern, is what they have it as, and it is Class A, very, very nice project. And so that's what we're looking for here. Again, Class A features leasing office, exercise facility, meeting room, library, resort pool, exterior staying consistent with what we've talked about before. 85% of that exterior will be brick, stone, or stucco. We will not exceed 310 units. That is in our PD, so it will not be a, we're not going to cram just a whole bunch of units on that site down there. It's going to be a max of 310. Average unit size is 850, and that sounds small, but, and it is, because we're going to have 60% one-bedroom units. Again, we leaned on these connections we have, the people we know, the people that have shown interest in this tract, and they've studied this market, and they understand it, and the market is young professionals. And things I didn't know as we started this, when my wife and I got married, we wanted a two-bedroom, we wanted the extra space. They say today, you know, the demand is one, that even young married couples are looking for one bedroom. So it'll be highly skewed to one bedrooms with some two bedrooms and a few three bedrooms. And some of those three bedrooms will be corporate leases for Baker Hughes. We have not solidified anything with them. We've had other things that we've talked to them. And Damon also is in the corporate housing business, so he understands the corporate housing business better than anybody. And so a portion of this will be corporate units that will stay on the books all the time for various businesses, but not limited to Baker Hughes.
So you have those two in terms of young professionals, as well as the Baker Hughes, the kind of the corporate occupant within the complex. But another thing that resounded true to us as we started to explore further on the secondary and tertiary market, of course, we all know about Exxon's impact to this region as it is. Well, we had independently discussed with their relocation, one of their relocation specialists, and had compared notes with city officials as well, who heard the same thing, that Exxon, what's interesting about it, Exxon is importing this massive wave of personnel to our entire region. A segment, a fairly significant segment of that relocation, translocation, you would say, is made up of individuals who have about 5 years left before they retire. And they're not looking at relocating and purchasing here. So there is a latent demand, significant demand by this enormous wave of relocated employees who have a great deal of value, represent a great deal of value to Exxon for leases. And they're likely, they want it maintenance-free. These are the characteristics that were shared with us. They want it maintenance-free, they want it flexible, and they want it for a stint of time so that when they are due for retirement, they can wrap up their goods, move back to Virginia or California or wherever they are currently housed right now, and they're not selling their homes there. They will be leasing their homes there in anticipation for coming back. So it's an interesting concept. I was born in Texas. I don't know where else anyone would want to consider retiring. So, but I'm not going to blame them for that. If that's how they feel, and no offense there, Rebecca. I just stepped on myself for that one. But the reality is, there's a very real demand that's been shared with us from the Exxon relocation groups in that regard, and we have a front row seat to be able to accommodate them in that regard and keep, because they have expectations of the quality of the type of the development here. It has to be a Class A garden style project. And in the overall, I don't want to stay focused on that. It really needs to be this development. It is the PD that must be at that level of quality, not only for the end user, not only for ourselves, because we have a great deal of financial investment here, but also for the city. We think because that area, the city made a fantastic investment with the Baker Hughes alignment. We are simply the second domino to fall, we think. And if we're able to do this and execute it in the proper fashion, then it sets the bar high. And what it does is it helps galvanize the ever-developing now corridor, commercial corridor, that's taking shape at 2978 and 2920. And that's the city's eastern boundary line. One thing that we like about it, we don't mind being on the outpost, on the eastern boundary, because if we set the bar high enough, then it really establishes the benchmark for other quality development there. You're less likely to see something of a secondary nature show up when the prevailing market condition is of a quality of Class A construction.
And the last little bit on that is the average rental rate, we've done it through the apartment developers we've worked with thus far. They've done a market analysis. They know who their comparables are, and they're looking at $1.25 to $1.30 a square foot. They're really hanging near the $1.30 a square foot range, so that 850 square foot unit is going to be $1,050 a month. So this is not, this caters to a very strict young professional crowd. It's not just for anybody. So we know the market we're going after here. Lastly, as we hit our developments to finish up the north side, it will be, as we create this between the hotel occupants, the people that are living there in the apartments, we now have a community, and then there will be infill from that, as well as what's happening around us at the 2978-2920 intersection there. So we know there will be demand for retail, not big box retail, we know that, but unanchored retail that will be support of the community that's developed there. Dry cleaners, some local restaurants have shown interest. Things that we do as you go to and fro each day, coffee shop, those type things that will be infill on that northern 13 acres as we finish up. And again, to finish up this slide, we stay consistent with the building characteristics will be the same throughout. We're still hammering home the brick, stone, stucco, and left off the glass will be a major portion of this. And that includes what we have in our PowerPoint. Mm-hmm. Questions will be next.
Thank you. Is there anyone here that would like to speak regarding this zoning request? And you will have 3 minutes to speak. Please state your name and address for the record.
Chairman, we have a request to speak form from Kelly Violet of 29201 Quinn Road.
Okay.
Good evening, Commissioners. Kelly Violet, I'm the Executive Director of the Tomball Economic Development Corporation, 29201 Quinn Road, Suite B, Tomball, Texas 77375. I'm here tonight and want to speak in support of this project and the rezoning. I've had the opportunity to spend some time with Mr. Palermo and Mr. Haley and really kind of get a good feel for what this project is, and I think that it's going to be a tremendous addition to the city and really the impetus for growth along our entire eastern boundary. There's really two areas that I want to kind of focus on tonight, and the first one being the hotel development. I have met half a dozen hotel developers over the past year as Baker Hughes is getting closer to completion. And I'll be honest with you, 2 years ago, I couldn't get a hotel developer to talk to me. And they just had no interest. We didn't have the growth. It wasn't there. And now that Baker Hughes is moving forward, we got ExxonMobil that is obviously creating a huge buzz within our area. You know, to be honest with you, I have had meeting after meeting with hotel developers that are specifically looking at this corner. The challenge has been nobody wants to be the first in. They don't want to be a standalone hotel. They want the amenities nearby. They want the restaurants. They want the retail. And so everybody's kind of shied away, hoping that a project such as this would come into play. And so I think that really what we would see with this development is we would be very quick to get the hotel component filled up, and that would be utilized tremendously by Baker Hughes. I've recently had a meeting with Baker Hughes representatives, in fact, last week, and specifically wanted to talk about this project, but overall this corner and what they're hoping to see. When we met with them initially back, you know, 2 years ago when they were talking about this project and we were moving forward on the grant and the annexation and whatnot, you know, my question was, where are you putting 50,000 trainees? Where are they going to be? Where are they going to be staying? And their comment to me at that time was, you know, we're really hoping that the market steps up, and we have, you know, hotel developers that are looking at going in. We have all this land right around the corner, and we're really hoping that something goes in nearby where it's within walking distance. Obviously, that hasn't happened at this point. And so we revisited that at my meeting last week, and their comment to me was, at this point, they're likely going to be staying in the hotels that are near Bush Airport. That is a huge missed opportunity for us. That's a missed opportunity on hotel occupancy taxes. It's a missed opportunity on sales tax. And it really doesn't bear well for the city. I mean, we have this world-class training center and nothing to support it. The other thing that I want to really bring out is the multifamily component. As we move forward on our business park, which is on Hussmith Corville at Holdery, so just south of this site, and we move forward on getting prospective tenants and buyers for this site, you know, we need housing options. Obviously, ExxonMobil is driving the housing. I was fortunate enough to be one of those that were, and I'll wrap up, able to attend the Fairfax, Virginia relocation fair, and that I can attest to what Mr. Palermo had said. These people are, a good majority of them, not wanting to relocate for the long term, and they're looking for quality housing developments. A lot of them want to be in a small town like Tomball. They want the safety, they want the quick access via the Grand Parkway, but we don't really offer that right now. So I want to just commend Mr. Haley and Mr. Palermo on this project. I think it's very well planned and very well thought out, and I think it's tailored to Tomball. Thank you.
Keith Jennings.
Yes. Good to be here. Thank you. My name is Keith Jennings. I reside at 25614 Bridal Creek Drive, Magnolia, Texas, 77355. I'm here representing Crow Manufacturing Corporation, which is a commercial industrial business in proximity to this proposed development. I'm also here representing our family trust, which owns the property that our company resides on. We're a 52-year-old manufacturing business that relocated to Tomball in 1996 from Houston. It was the best move we've ever made in our company's history, and we've really made a home here and appreciate everything that happened and the cooperation we've had with the city and the chamber and others. I have, over the past 3 to 4 months or so, we did meet Mr. Dark and his team when we met and were made aware of his development, and he was aware of the proximity to our business, which has been there for a while. He was certainly interested in that and interested in getting our feedback and our thoughts on his development, since we are basically the only business on that side of the road that could potentially be impacted by this. And of course, as any owner of property like this, industrial property, we have 7+ acres, about 50 or so employees, and we do a lot of work for a lot of companies, and our products that we produce there are shipped all over the world. So we have a lot going on there. It's a busy company, and it's a good location for us. And we saw what was coming a long time ago. So we've enjoyed being out there kind of by ourselves on that end of town, but we saw this coming and we're prepared for this. After becoming acquainted with Mr. Dark and his team, communicating with them, he did ask me to come share my thoughts with the commission and our concerns or anything we may have about it. And what I did want to state tonight to the commission was, at this point in time, based upon what we know as of today and this month, our family and our company would endorse this project. Again, anything that would change from here on out, or any layout or anything that could negatively impact our property or business, we certainly would have concerns about that, and would certainly hope to be included in any discussions in that impact. So based upon what we know, we do feel that Mr. Dark and his team has been very open. They've communicated with us. They've been very forthright and wanted to know our feedback and our concerns about this. We have shared some of those with him, and they have spoken to those and assured us that they would work with us, wanted to be good neighbors with us, and would work with us to make it all a success. And we certainly would like to see that. We like the location. We intend to stay there at this point in time. We like our relationship with the city. My kids are all Tom Ball ISD students, and this has been our home for a long time. So we do like it. We intend to stay there and continue operating, employing people, serving the community, and being part of the community. And we hope that will continue and that this will develop and be a positive thing for all of us. However, we do want to share, you know, any property owner like this, any concerns that would impact our property, whether it be drainage, the security of the property, or anything, are a concern, and we will address that. But at this point in time, based upon the information we have been given, we do support the development and the efforts of their team. Okay?
Thank you, Mr. Jennings. Is there anyone else?
No.
Is there anyone else who'd like to make any comments or speak? Hearing none. The public hearing is now closed. The time is now 6:56. May I have a motion to approve zoning case P14-040?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Any questions?
I don't have any. I think they discussed the design and everything. They answered all my questions that I would have brought forth. It was very good.
This is going to come back, right? This will come back for some, you know, is this the final on this, or?
Well, what's going to happen is that, obviously, you know, once it goes through City Council with the first reading and the second reading, what will happen is that if anything on the concept plan changes, so, Brandy, I just want to show the concept plan right quick. So, this concept plan that is in your staff reports and what you see before you. So, if they have any additional detail, let's say to that retail portion on the top left on that northern tract, you don't see a building there. Well, when they decide how that tract is going to develop, they have to come before the Planning and Zoning Board or Commission. Why? Because they're modifying this concept plan, and so you will see it. If that hotel configuration changes, you will see it and have to approve it. Or, I'm sorry, you'll have to give a recommendation, and then ultimately the City Council will approve it. So we'll come back here if there are any substantial changes to the concept plan, or they intend to change any of the ordinances, let's say the design standards. They must come before you to ask for permission to do so.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to know.
Sounds good.
Mm-hmm. Can I answer your question?
Yes.
All righty. Please enter your vote now.
Motion carries 4-0.
All right. Thank you. 5.11. Staff, may we have a presentation of proposed updates to the building codes?
I'll have the dust to settle before I start.
That's fine. That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. I'm here to talk about the building code updates. Probably a lot of you have seen this and heard about this. It's been around for some time, so we'll start with this. First of all, I wanted to briefly discuss the purpose of the codes. The purpose of building codes is essentially to reduce potential hazards, such as fires, structural collapses, any general deterioration, and also minimize any damage should a disaster happen to strike a particular structure. They also promote higher quality construction through minimum code standards, promote energy conservation through, and also help with lowering utility bills through updated technologies. And also safer construction, not just safer for occupants, but also safer for first responders should there something happen. Why update codes? Essentially, codes should be updated essentially to utilize uniform standards and updated technology and methods which can save money. For new construction, homeowners would get the latest, I'm going to use homes for an example, homeowners would get the latest technology for the money. And just think about any new construction, you would spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on a new house. But if we don't update the codes, you're using standards and methods that are over a decade old. Or even think of the analogy of buying a car. You go to a car lot and you want to buy a 2012 car. Well, you buy a 2012 car, not with a CD player, but with a cassette deck. So the technology is not there where it needs to be today. Also, outdated codes negatively affect the community's ISO building code effectiveness grading schedule, which I'm going to refer to as BCEGS from here on out. That impact is essentially has an impact on your insurance premiums. So the higher the number, the worse your insurance premiums would be, or your worse your rating. Currently, the city of Tomball is a class 6. If we do not update our codes, we would drop to a class 10, which is absolutely the worst rating you can possibly get. Also, older codes reference older standards, such as ASTM, AWWA, NFPA, ASCE. So if you're referencing old standards, you're once again referencing old stuff. Also, we have also noticed that design professionals and builders are already utilizing newer codes. Think about some of the young professionals out in this world these days and just out of college, and they're coming up and knowing all the new technology. They've been trained on updated building codes of 2012, but they get to their office and, oh, we got to build to something before I was even, you know, I was back in high school. Things that are well over a decade old, that they'd have to revert back to old methods and technology. And also, I'll keep in mind before making a decision about this, that there's a lot of surrounding communities that are already on 2012 code, so this isn't new to anybody around here. Just for an example, Katy, Pearland, College Station, and also Dallas, Austin, Midland, San Antonio are all on 2012 codes, and soon to be Houston, among others. Those are just the list that I came up with. And some of our surrounding communities as well, Magnolia, Conroe, Willis, they're on 2009 codes, so they're even further along than Tomball is today. So where are we today? Essentially, we are, I would say, 11 years behind. We're on the 2003 International Building Code, Residential Code, Mechanical Code, and Plumbing Code. And we're also in the 2005 National Electric Code, so we're 9 years behind on that. It's a different edition. The latest National Electric Code that we would consider adopting is NEC 2011. So why the urgency? I mentioned that ISO reviewed the city last June and gave us a proposed re-rating of class 10, which I mentioned is the worst possible rating. And if we do adopt the updated codes, we would maintain our current class 6. ISO looks at versions of code, record keeping, floodplain regulations, hazards in our area such as hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires. They also look at staff experience, education, certifications, training, and also the frequency of plan reviews and inspections based on the amount of people we have and the workload we have. The proposed ordinance changes, as I mentioned, would be from 2003 to 2012 for the IBC, the IRC, and the Mechanical Code and the Plumbing Code as well. And then, as I mentioned, the changes from the 2005 National Electric Code to the 2011. And also some other changes that are, and I assume you got the handout, there's a Chapter 14 changes. There's other changes that are redlined in that, and I'm just going to touch on them that are a little less significant, but I want to point them out to you. There's also changes that are proposed to obviously reference the updated International Fire Code. Right now, our Chapter 14 references IFC 2000, IFC 2012, assuming the fire codes get updated as well. And also, There's some other cleanup things in there. It exempts permits for fences up to 8 feet in height instead of 6 feet. It's been a policy decision that the city has made some time ago, just never been put into an ordinance. And also, it requires comprehensive general liability insurance for electricians. It's something that we've been requiring, and then it got pulled out. It's a cleanup thing. It needs to be put back in there. Some other cleanup things in the ordinance is changing licensed by the state, to clarify that to licensed by the state of Texas for electricians, and also inserts for a period of 60 days after the death of a master of electrician, any person in the electrical contractor's business must complete any work authorized under the permit. Another cleanup item is eliminating the requirement for a master plumber to provide a bond to the city. That's required today, something that that's in the code, something that's been done away with some time ago. So once again, cleanup item. There's also some parts of the ordinance that don't mesh with the charter. So I'm going to run through these really quick. Essentially, it eliminates the step of hearing appeals at planning commission instead of city council. The appeal process has always been the city council's with the cleanup item. And also changes that the building official serves at the pleasure of the city manager rather than city council. So what's been done so far? After we got our ISO rating, and actually, or our proposed ISO rating or BCEGS rating, we actually in the process. So they just happened, the timing worked out that we were going towards this update, but then all of a sudden they decided to show up. So we had already purchased books, and we were already gearing up nearly a year ago for this update. So we purchased the books. Essentially gone, their staff, building official staff and inspectors have gone through training on the updated codes. And we've also reached out to the development community through meetings or whatever, through inspections, basically saying, giving them the heads up that we are pursuing a 2012 change. So this should be nothing new to anyone. And we also discussed this potential update with City Council back in February. We've also solicited some feedback from the development community about the updated codes. I can read through these real quick. We did get some supportive statement of the code updates. Some of them said none of us see any issue with changing codes. Most of the entities already are on updated codes. While there are some changes, there's not sweeping changes, just essentially some technical updates. Some people think it's a good idea because we're over 10 years old. And then some people say they don't even know what the difference is. So to give you the magnitude of the changes, there are 1,657 section changes since 2003. That's 6,978 pages of code. All over there on that table. I'm not strong enough to lift it up. And also 3,269 pages of significant changes. So if we went through all of that, it's essentially 3,269 pages of reading. And this is all since 2003. Give you a few significant change examples. We wanted to kind of give you an idea of what changes were made. This is not all encompassing. This is just a handful of things that we've had experience with over the last few months. As we transition, we've noticed things have popped up. We've noticed the occupancy separation rules have been greatly clarified and simplified. Essentially, there are 100, well, today there's 300 occupancy separation requirements in the 2003 code. With the updated code, there's 110 occupancy separations, hard to say that. And also, here's an example where it became problematic. We had a situation with one commercial building in town where they had to meet 2003 occupancy requirements or occupancy separation requirements, which required a 3-hour wall. If we were into 2012 codes, they wouldn't have been the need for a 3-hour wall. Same, and this is between two different occupancies within the same building. So think about the fact that we're in 2003 codes instead of 2012. We've cost at least two projects that I know of thousands of dollars to comply with antiquated codes. Also, some significant changes to the International Mechanical Code. There's a requirement of locking tight caps on refrigerant lines to prevent unauthorized access to the refrigerant, which is typically what some teenagers get their hands on and get a cheap high, which is very unhealthy, obviously, if you know anything about that. And then also, there's some leniency with the dryer duct length. Today's 2003 is 25 feet. With the updated codes, it gives you an additional 10 feet to play with. Here's another example of what recently transpired that caused us conflict with older codes. This is International Residential Code 2003. 2003 versus 2012 in regards to the handrail height. The 2003 code states that any handrails cannot exceed 38 inches in height. However, we dealt with one developer home builder that put in a series of these homes that the handrails, essentially the handrail fittings, the points between the handrails and at the bottom, exceeded 38 inches. Mm-hmm. So they didn't meet code. So there was quite a bit of dialogue. What are we going to do now? Do we need to have them rip out all their stairways and redo all their railings? However, we came to a conclusion in working with the development community, since they were already built and it cost them thousands and thousands to get back into compliance with older codes, that our building official and we, you know, put our heads together and came up with an alternate method of approval and basically let them go on along their way without having to rip everything out that they had already done. Here's another example of that we had on a commercial development in town. The plumbing code of 2003 requires a shower pan lining to either be liquid type shower pan lining. They're required to either have hot mop or vinyl pan lighting, which is much more pricey than the what's can be allowed in the 2012 code, which is liquid shower pan lining. It was pointed out during the review of these plans that they put their design in with the updated and much cheaper version. However, we had to indicate to them that we're on 2003 codes, so they had to install the much more costly vinyl pans. Other changes in the International Residential Code is the requirement for stairway light switches on each floor, top and bottom of stairs. Should be common sense there. And also, no fire blocking is required between wood frame floors on floor ceiling assemblies. Other minor changes in the International Residential Code that can cause less labor costs and less material costs is allowing end joints to be installed anywhere. It doesn't have to be installed above a stud. Also, one metal tie is required to connect to double top plates where two is required in 2003. So it's, once again, probably a real minimal cost on construction, but think about the labor costs as well. A few more International Residential Code changes. Green gypsum board is no longer allowed in 2012. It's essentially is the surface that you find behind the tiles. Essentially, it's not waterproof, and it can deteriorate if it gets wet and also grow and breed mold. It's allowed in the 2003 codes, but in 2012 it's not. So we could still have construction issues with some of these older codes in regards to mold. A few other changes, wood composite, plastic composites are now allowed. This helps me greatly with my vision, as there's minimum dimensions for address labels on businesses, so you can actually read the street address from the street with these new standards. A couple of safety things. Circuit breaker panels are prohibited on stairways. It's kind of a common sense thing. Once again, if you get shocked, you probably have enough problems, but falling down the stairs, you're probably causing much more problems for yourself. So, and also to protect babies, I'll have to bring up the outlet receptacles. Essentially, they're designed to where if they've got a sharp object and you put it in one side of the receptacle, it will not shock them. Essentially, it has a what's called a shutter in it, and you have to essentially insert something into both shutters in order, like, you know, two prongs and a plug in order for the outlet to work. So if a kid gets a pencil or something and shoves it in the outlet in one of the holes, it won't depress and you will not get shocked. Other changes, the doors between a residence and a swimming pool need to be installed with alarms, so another safety thing for the kids. And also, there's a requirement for self-closing doors between the garage and the dwelling unit, so any possibility of fire could be dampened by a door that's closed. And another safety issue is safety glazing is required on windows that are along stairways and at the bottom of stairways, so if you didn't have enough problems already by falling down the stairs and twisting your ankle, you could fall through the window and, you know, 30 feet to your death. So.
You know, so much fun.
That could be a problem.
I'm the biggest klutz, so these mean a lot to me. So probably not as much as Rebecca.
Wow.
Awful.
Sorry.
That was harsh.
Very. A couple other residential code changes. There's fall-through protection for windows based on the height of the window above the finished floor. That's not a requirement in 2003, but it is in 2012. So essentially, you know, I have actually had low windows in my house that are not protected, so my daughter could essentially lean out and fall out the window in my house, but it's another safety protection. It's for the kids. A couple more things. I'm trying not to bore you to death here, but there's a long list here. There's also an allowance for wireless smoke alarm interconnection. That technology didn't exist in 2003, so you're not going to have these hardwired smoke alarms. Essentially, they can communicate wirelessly. And there's also a new requirement now for carbon monoxide detectors, which obviously come at a pretty small expense, but great safety, and they're required where there's fuel-burning appliances exist within the home, or if a garage is also attached to the home. And also, there's an allowance in 2012 code to put a bathroom with a sloped ceiling underneath, so it's maximizing the use of a space so that you can have lower ceilings underneath the stairways for, say, a bathroom. Here's a little bit of a simple construction method. In the 2012 code, there's an allowance for single-member headers. Essentially, if you look at the picture up there, the header on the right is much easier to construct, and there's less wood involved, less labor involved. So that is a practice that would be allowed in 2012, but not today in 2003. And think about that big opening there that you could stuff a lot of insulation in. Say it's an exterior door that you could help the energy efficiency of your home as opposed to the other option. Another requirement of 2012 that's not required in 2003 is a requirement of kick-out flashing to prevent water intrusion into the wall assembly. You think about the runoff from a roof running down, and then sometimes you can walk by some exposed walls and you see all the slime and mildew and mold. Essentially, this is a kick-out flashing that pushes the water out so you don't have water intrusion into the wall or these unsightly mildew-covered walls. So once again, it helps with the maintenance costs and long-term viability of the structure. Finally, I'm going to touch on the schedule. We're obviously at Planning and Zoning Commission tonight as part of the schedule. The schedule is to get it on the next City Council agenda, which is next Monday the 21st, and then the second reading on the 5th. The effective date, or the proposed effective date of the updated codes would be on June 1st, 2014. You may ask what the rush. Our deadline is June 13th. And once again, we've been communicating to the development community that this is coming. And we would essentially, this June 1st deadline of the new codes would be with new submittals. So any plans that have been submitted prior to that date or going through the process or back and forth or whatever would not be part of these codes. We would be under the old codes. With that, building official here and one of the inspectors is here to answer any questions as well as myself.
Thank you. Okay, I will now open it up for discussion for action regarding a recommendation of approval to the proposed updates to the building codes. Or do I have to have a motion? Doesn't say I have to have a motion. This is I will now.
The next item is discussion and action, so I guess we move on to the next item on the agenda. That item is just a presentation.
Yeah, because he's done with his presentation. Do we need a motion? I don't have a problem with that. Okay. Does anybody have any questions or anything you'd like to ask?
Yeah, just curious because some of the, construction field is what I've done. Some of these are, I understand why you want to update it and all that, but on some of them, I'm a little bit worried. It's like you're, it's
I'm
like.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Actually, I'm a little bit worried. I'm a little concerned. Some of them, I think, are like the end joints and all that, you don't think they need to be over a stud?
There's been studies that have been done since 2012, and I'm going to defer to the building official with his official opinion on that, but obviously okay. There's been a lot of work and
right. Coordination I understand
with
that.
Building officials to come up with this criteria.
Where did you get these this stuff from? I mean, as far as this is
this,
from all from
detail,
the
I mean, this
book.
Is from the updated books. I mean,
okay.
We're just to keep in mind, we're jumping three series because right. We're in 2003 today. We skipped over 6, 9, and 12, so this is a kind of a combination of everything.
Of everything all put together.
And the things that we've have had personal experience with, knowing with what we know between the 3 and 12 codes, so in our research.
Okay. Just want to make sure. Asked.
I just want to comment that I didn't have a problem if the graduates from these schools come back and learn some old technology, because I think it's always a great way to go, the basics, yes, and then come up. But it was just commenting.
Okay. Keep in mind, too, just for me to add from my perspective, that most jurisdictions are, in fact, I can't think of another jurisdiction that's operating off of the 2003 mm-hmm. codes. Most of them are, at the oldest, the 2006, probably 2009, and a few are 12s, but most are right now at 9.
Based on the research I had, I only found a couple, and very, very few are as far behind.
So what that means is that you know, the builders are used to the updated codes, and there might even be some things, as Craig pointed out, that they'd have to do differently to conform to the old codes, because they're used to conforming with newer codes. So.
Richard, do you have any questions?
No, I have a comment.
I have a question. Well, you were talking about the requirement for the carbon monoxide detectors. Mm-hmm. There's not a requirement in there for sprinklers?
No.
Or smoke alarms?
Smoke alarms are already today, mm-hmm. but carbon monoxide detectors on top of it. And a lot mm-hmm. of the new carbon monoxide smoke detectors are combo units these days, mm-hmm. so they're probably only a few dollars more than a typical okay. smoke alarm.
So how does it address fire sprinklers, you know, water sprinklers in your houses?
David, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it does, the building code does requires it for commercial. Is that right? But I don't think that you can add it for residential anymore. You could for a while, and then they...
State legislature.
Legislature.
Sprinklers?
Yes.
Legislature said we can't require sprinklers in residential.
Right.
But
if you had an ordinance requiring it, you could leave it, but you couldn't add it or tweak it or make the existing ordinance more applicable. Yeah.
But that's only in regards to residential, right?
Right.
Not commercial.
Right. But it's in the commercial codes.
But it's in the commercial.
Right. In the fire code.
They can't burn down buildings and burn down houses. Okay. All right. Is this going to resolve a lot of the supposed conflicts, do you believe?
Between?
I get a lot of people who say that they have everything done, they come in, and the difference between, like, we're going to move the fire code to 2012, we're going to that one, and the building codes, well, everything will be the same year. Will that help a lot with...
Absolutely. We're on the... 2006. Around 2006 IFC, and then the building codes, as I mentioned, mm-hmm. 2003. There's already conflicts existing for
right.
years. So for all in the 2012, mm-hmm. which is the proposal that the fire department is doing for IFC, then yes, they're all being synced, because these books are written by the same agency, mm-hmm. the National Code Council of ICC.
So this will overall help improve our relationship with builders and developers coming in, because they're used to working with these newer codes that instead of having to go backwards.
Exactly. This is new for Tomball, but it's really mm-hmm. not new for anyone else.
Right. And so that helps with the costs that they incur here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you. Okay. So...
You can just start with this part if you're ready to do a motion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Would y'all like to do a motion? Somebody want to give a motion to approve sending this on to City Council?
A motion to approve.
Okay, second?
I'll second.
Okay. Is there any other discussion or anything about it? Anybody have any other questions before we do this? Okay. Well, then, seeing none, place your votes now, please. Present them.
Motion carries 4-0.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you. Well, the meeting is now adjourned. It is 7:23.
We need a motion.
Thank you all so very much.
We need a motion to approve.
Oh, I need a motion to adjourn. Pardon me.
Motion.
I'm in a hurry.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Second.
No, ma'am. Thank you, everybody. All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Lock it in. Make it official.
All in favor, say aye.
Thank you.
Have a nice
aye.
Evelyn.